So I was when I was thinking about this talk, or thinking about what to say about what it means to be a Mitra, or become a Mitra, or both really, it struck me that one of the koans of life is that we exist both alone, as it were, sort of existentially we are alone, and inevitably we are also in relation to other. And most of the complexities of life seem to be the whole business of being in relation to other. Certainly most of the complications of the spiritual life seem to be about the complications of, you know, the complexities of being in relation to other. And for most of the time, for most of us, we pootle along, perhaps not really paying very much attention to either the nature of our separateness or to the nature of our connections, in a way, to other people. Perhaps there are sort of particular connections that we pay a lot of attention to, particular relationships. But most of us, much of the time, pootle along, not paying much attention, in a slightly sheepy sort of way. In FWBO sort of jargon, we talk about this as sort of being a group member, or it's traditionally been talked about as being a group member, just sort of going along, living life in a particular sort of way, having a particular set of views, not because we've actually thought them through for ourselves and decided upon them, but just because they happen to be the set of views that we've been brought up with, or the, you know, the societal context that we've been in, and we've just sort of absorbed them. They're not very, you know, we're often not even aware that we have these views, particularly, until we come into contact with somebody who hasn't got them, and then we just get a bit confused, or threatened, as perhaps, depending on the nature of the view. And what happens is, somewhere in amongst that, somewhere we have happened upon a place like this. We happen upon a Buddhist centre. And we start coming along. Probably the first thing we do is we come along and we get sat on a cushion by somebody, and told to notice our breath or our bodies or cultivate positive emotion or something like that. So we start noticing ourselves a bit more, and we start working a bit on our minds. People start telling us stuff about the consequences of doing that. People start saying a bit about how you might go about living your life in accord with the things that Buddhism teaches. People start telling us about some Buddhist ideas, in a way, some Buddhist ways of looking at the mind, looking at human existence. So over time, we start getting some kind of sense of a path, some sense of some sort of sense of new ways or different ways of looking at life, based on Buddhist ideas, based on Buddhist ideals. And I remember for myself when I started coming along, I found that stuff kind of fascinating, really exciting, and slightly bewildering. You know, it's kind of all these radical new ideas about emotions didn't just happen to you like the weather, for example. That was a big one. And a curious thing happens as we start to do this, as we start to notice ourselves, as we start to sort of reflect a bit on these ideas that we've been presented with, as we start to look at our behaviour, is that we start to separate out from the group, in a way. We start to experience ourselves as a bit more alone in certain respects. We find ourselves in our work situations thinking, or in our family situation, thinking, well, actually, I don't think I agree with that sort of behaviour anymore. Or, well, I don't really want to do that, you know. And actually, no, maybe I'd just rather go and have a quiet night in rather than go down the pub with everybody else. Something like that. We start kind of separating out, and that can be quite lonely and uncomfortable, particularly to start off with, particularly to begin with. And particularly the whole business, you know, as we start to meditate, we just start to understand ourselves a little bit more, start to sort of see ourselves a bit more clearly. And so, in some respects, that's quite satisfying and rewarding, and in some respects, that can be quite humiliating. A bit sort of like, oh, lummy, I'm like that, aren't I? Ooh. Okay, well, I'll come back to that later, I think, you know. But sort of, you know, as is the mysterious way with all of these things, as well as experiencing ourselves as slightly separate, perhaps, a bit more separate than we'd realised, or experiencing that aloneness a bit more fully, we also start to experience the deeper nature of our connection with others a bit more. Particularly when we start doing things like the metta bhavana and start sort of seeing through the sort of superficial things that make you different from me, or the boss different from me, or, you know, or whatever, to the ways in which, you know, at quite a deep level, we share a common humanity. There's something about our experience which is fundamentally shared, common, we each have. And we also start to, well, I suppose when we come into contact with the other people who are engaging in a similar sort of exploration to us, we also start to sort of notice a sense of commonality with them. There's something going on, sometimes with people who are very, very unlike us, you know, people that we might not ever have met otherwise. And there's something, you know, the fact that they're engaging in this business in the same way that we are, gives us a sense, an experience of connection, which can be quite delightful, but again also sometimes a bit threatening, actually, that sort of sense of connection. So I just thought this was quite interesting, this sort of, you know, this sort of the way in which these things work. We experience kind of these sort of seemingly opposite things, but somehow they're related, somehow they're the same thing, manifesting in sort of slightly, in a way, in sort of opposite ways. So you come along to classes here, or Bristol in my case, or wherever it is, and people start telling you things about Buddhism, and they tell you about these three jewels that we have on our cases, the golden jewel of the Buddha, this idea of the Buddha as role model, as exemplar, as somebody who's fulfilled their potential, setting up a sort of goal, as it were, something that we could move towards ourselves. The blue jewel of the Dharma, the path, a set of tools for working on oneself to move towards that goal, to fulfil that potential. And the red jewel of the Sangha, the spiritual community, in a way, the support systems, you know, the other people who are doing the same things, but the support system, the people who, with whom we can experience that sort of stronger connection, who can provide a context for us to work on ourselves, support, encouragement. They can reflect back to us our successes and our weaknesses, our failures, in a way that other people, even if they're very close to us, if they're not doing the same thing, they can't quite see, they can't quite notice in the same way. And I think that process of witnessing is very important. The more, you know, over time I've come to see that whole business of sort of having one's practice, having the work one is doing on oneself, witnessed by somebody else who understands both how difficult it is to do that and how refreshing and rewarding it is to do that. It's really important, I think. So we come along to classes, we get teachings that provide us with tools, we get encouragement, we get support, we get these ideas and ideals presented to us, yeah, a vision of the possibilities of what it might mean, what it could mean to live a fully human life, you know, and I'm saying fully human here in very big, bright letters, you know, really fully human. And we come into contact with other people who are doing it too. And we do those things not because we have to. Yeah, I mean, we make it a point here to exert an absolute minimum of pressure on people to get involved, you know. We try to do our best to make it open, the open hand of a good teacher is the phrase that's used in the Dharma. We've got stuff here. If it's useful to you, you're very, very welcome to it. Yeah? Use it to the extent that you find it useful. I mean, we tease people sometimes, but that's another matter, really. We don't do it because we have to. We do it because we want to. And so what we start to get is a bunch of people who are doing something together, not because there's a pressure on them to, not because they feel obliged to, although given that we're ordinary human beings, those things come in as well, but because we've all got the same sort of aspirations, we share similar aspirations, we share similar volitions, as it were. And the phrase that we sometimes use in this respect is a mutual coincidence of wills. And I'll come back to this later on. It's kind of like we have these wills, an intention. And our intentions are lining up. You know, we each have intentions and they each point in similar directions. Yeah? So our wills, our intentions coincide. And so, at some point in that process, for each of us, there's a something bubbles through into our minds that says, "Yeah, I want to do this. Yeah, I really want to do this. This is important and significant to me." For some people, that is a very conscious decision. You know, sometimes it's kind of like, oh yes, I really want to do this, and it's very sort of present in their experience. Sometimes, for some people, it's kind of they find that they are doing it before they've realised that they've made that decision. You know, that's interesting, I've been coming here for 2 years, haven't I?